The flexibility of having the deputy mayor, Mick Renheisen, on the phone with us this morning allows us to combine segments. So if we need to get to a little sports, he will help us out with a golf angle this morning. Mick Renheisen, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Glass. Good morning to you.
And the golfer, we have a local who is going to make some swings this week at the Senior U.S. Open out at the Broadmoor. Have you been to the Broadmoor in lovely Colorado Springs?
I have toured it, but not played it. Beautiful place, and the golf course looks magnificent. I know Craig Bowden will enjoy, I hope, his experience there and play well and represent the area as one of our local professional golfers. I don't know how many people remember Craig playing on the PGA Tour.
Right.
Now that he's moving on to the Senior Tour, as he is eligible to do by his age, but very, very much a local golfer that's done well for himself.
And this will be the first of two major championships he plays in this summer on the Senior Tour. He qualified for the Senior PGA, a week or two ago? So he'll be at Belrive with the big boys coming up in August. So I saw a yardarm, one of the Billy Andrade posted on Twitter, the 17th hole at the Broadmoor, par 4, 545 yards. The ball does go a little further at altitude, doesn't it, Mick? I hope that's downhill and downwind as well for these guys.
Well, it does go farther. My experience in mountain air golf is about 10% farther. I'll never forget my first tee shot in Colorado and the first time I'd played at a mountain course. And I was like, well, how did I just hit the ball that far?
But
that was why someone explained it to me. It's the thin air, silly.
I'm moving here and playing all my golf up in the altitude. Tiger Woods is back in action at the TPC Potomac at Avenel Farm. The Quicken Loans National is getting started this morning. Field of 120. Tiger's never played this event before. Mickey's going to a new putter. Is that going to help?
Well, he needs to do something.
Can't
hurt. His strength was putting, but that's unfortunately what you have to say now is it was. If he can get that stick going again, then look out. He might get hot again.
We always like for him a tournament where par is a good score because he's the wonderful scrambler grinder.
That he is.
And when you need to make 25 birdies, that opens up the field to a lot more choices. When the course is harder, usually the cream rises to the top. So we'll keep an eye on Tiger on the weekend. Are you watching the World Cup at all?
I am not.
That's fair.
Not any particular reason other than I did not grow up with the culture of soccer. I've tried to warm up to it. It's kind of like hockey for me. I just struggle with not playing it, not understanding it as well. So I just haven't picked up that as a part of my viewing habits.
The Germans are out for the first time in history. That surprises everybody. First time in their history. It's the fifth of the last six champions who haven't made it out of the group stage. The group stage finishes today. Big game is England-Belgium. That will decide a winner of that group. And the other group, you have Senegal, Colombia, and Japan. 4 points, 4 points, 3 points. Poland has been eliminated. You could have multiple scenarios work out of that, so we'll have some more drama before the knockout round starts. That's when we have to have a winner. That will start on Saturday. So we've got sports covered. Now it's time to get to the heavy lifting. We saw in a press release from the city yesterday, we've got everything ready to go for the 4th of July Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. That's going to be a busy 12, 14 hours here in town.
Well, it's our bicentennial. It should be something because of the significance that the city and the county celebrate in more magnificent fashion than other years, simply because it doesn't come around, but obviously once every several hundred years or so. So there's some great events that the community can take part in. Obviously, the county fair is going on early this year, so that's an opportunity for folks to get out and enjoy things at the fairgrounds. But on the city side, we've got B-Town Boom in collaboration with the Cook Group and CFC Properties, which is a family-friendly event that will start on Wednesday, July 3rd, down between College and Walnut on Kirkwood, so right outside of Fountain Square Mall and right behind the courthouse, if you will. That block will be closed off, and folks can celebrate in kind of a block party format as they get ready for the big show.
That's awesome.
Which is the fireworks.
Well, that needs to be blocked off for
10 o'clock that night.
Yeah, that needs to be blocked off for the next morning anyhow, so that makes perfect sense.
The stage will be there.
Yeah.
People can enjoy, hopefully, a beautiful night, afternoon, evening on July 3rd, getting ready for the July 4th parade, which follows the next day with 100 completely full parade exhibitions, if you will, going through the paces at 10 o'clock with the community van starting at 9 o'clock. So get out early, get your seats on the parade route for Wednesday morning, and get ready for the Bicentennial Parade.
And the Bicentennial Parade, temperature time, it's probably going to be in the upper 80s. around 10 a.m. to get things started. 100 entries, Mick. We know it's about 90 minutes, so it's not too bad, and there's plenty of shade along the route. The route is the same as it was last year, so we don't have to worry about putting people in other spots?
That is correct. I think the staging area to get started is a little different. I believe it's out in Dunmeadow, but or in that area. So that's for the people who are, of course, in the parade. But for the parade watchers, it's the same route. Find your spot, your favorite spot, find some shade, and enjoy a July 4th celebration.
100 entries will be in that. And again, about 90 minutes. It's very efficiently done. That's the other encouraging part of it. It is not an all-day affair. But it has great everybody that's in there. We're going to see everything from local organizations to the fire trucks and everything else that go on with that. So it's just a traditional parade. No price for the parade. No parking meters to worry about either. It's a holiday.
There you go. And for the let's just make one final comment about the fireworks, and that's obviously going to happen downtown at the Trades District location between 10th and 11th Street in the grassy area. So viewing, as people have been asking about that, where do I watch the fireworks from? And the answer is really anywhere within a mile radius where you have a clear view of the sky, because obviously these fireworks will be shot up higher than building height. So, too close and around buildings will be detrimental. Just find yourself a nice space. Could be your yard, could be one of the parks in the area.
Parking garages.
Really anywhere. Just kind of put a dot on the map at 10th and Morton and put a circle around it and see if you can find a spot high enough or somewhere that's got a clear view, and you should be able to watch.
Park somewhere, hang out on the Beeline Trail, wherever it may be, and the people with the downtown apartments or hotel rooms will have a nice view on Tuesday night. Obviously, there's no cost for fireworks either. That's been picked up by the folks at Cook and CFC, so we thank them for helping out with the city in that.
Yep, they've been great. Both the Beat Town Boom event that's going on the night before and when, right, preluding to the fireworks, and, of course, the fireworks show, all sponsored by CFC and Cook Group.
Now, if you don't have an answer for this, I understand. Is this something we are going to continue to do as a city moving forward on the night before the 4th of July, or is this a one-time, we'll wait and see how it goes, see how the development is, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that the latter answer, to try to evaluate how was it, is it better? Did we get enough people the chance to see the fireworks, and was it well-received in the locations that people watched it? Did it cause any downtown challenges? Now, next year, the Trades District might have a building or two on it coming
out of the
ground. Well, that's
kind of where I was going, right.
That may change things. Eventually, that will be the case. But Switchyard Park's coming out of the ground, and that might be a future location for a fireworks type ceremony or celebration as a launching point. So we'll have to evaluate after this first attempt to do it in a different location.
One more fireworks question, I promise I'm done. When the fireworks were done at Memorial Stadium, was that an Indiana University thing? Was that a collaboration? Who was in charge of that? People were always saying, why don't you just put it back at the big parking lot over there?
Well, that there was a volunteer group that did this for a long time, and that kind, just like the parade, was slowly, as the volunteers grew weary of the extra work it takes, and it takes a lot of work. These are events that I know our parks people plan for a year in advance, and so when you have volunteers doing it, eventually some of the burnout, lack of ability to sustain the event, can kind of handed it over in partnership to the city, and now this year, obviously, with our partners CFC and Cook Group. So the answer is, I don't remember who did it back at Memorial Stadium. It was likely the volunteer group. I don't know what permissions they needed to get from the university. Obviously, that was necessary, but just simply assuming they can go back to sites at one time that were used is not an assumption we can make, because things change. The Memorial Stadium sites changed dramatically.
Yes, it has.
Since the days of the parking
lot. The parking lot has changed dramatically. From gravel, rocks to pavement, it's changed dramatically.
That's right. So as those things change, you look for different sites. It's kind of like the farmer's market saga, if you will. It started out down by the library. It started out down in 3rd Street Park before that. As things grow, they sometimes outgrow their sites, and you need to look for other places. And that's kind of how I think some of the fireworks things happens. That and venues are not always available that might have been available in years before.
Mick Ranheisen's our guest this morning. The deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington checks in. Council was in action last night, and they have okayed the armored vehicle. Just give folks an update who might not have caught that story or know what's going on there. We know the armored vehicle is coming. Now it's codified. I don't know how you say that word. You've got all of its or most of its uses into some kind of legislation that has to be followed.
Right. So there's been several actions taken and a lot of public discussion since the first announcement of the purchase of the vehicle back in February. And since that time, obviously, there's been a number of city council meetings and Board of Public Safety meetings addressing concerns from some members of the public about how the vehicle might be used. Those concerns then manifested into, at the Board of Public Safety level, some policy language that mirrors, I think, almost identically what the city council passed. And essentially, it limits how the vehicle can be used to, and let me just say what it limits it in how it can be used, because the purpose of the vehicle has always remained the same. It is a rescue vehicle. It's intended to get our CERT team, our critical incident response team, which is our police officers specially trained for events that obviously escalate to a level of high level of violence with weapons involved, and risk to our community. And if an incident like that occurs, and unfortunately people watch the news, they've seen these incidents at schools and other type of violence that's occurred around our country, fortunately not here, but when you need to respond to something like that, we had no vehicle that could safely get our CERT member team to the incident scene without them being in jeopardy of being shot at or shot. That prohibits them from doing their job, getting to you if you're the one that's in a violent area and trying to get you out safely. So that's what the vehicle is for. That's what the vehicle's always been for. That's how the vehicle was intended to be used. And the council and the Board of Public Safety have simply said, here's where we don't want to see it used, at public events. For example, we won't have it in the 4th of July parade. You won't see it parading around town in any other fashion. As a way, if those are intimidated by the vehicle, we don't want that to be what they sense. This vehicle only comes out, kind of like an ambulance, when you need it. It's not to be driven around for any other reason. So that's one limitation. It will not have any affixed weaponry, so it won't have water cannons or a battering ram or anything else that could shoot a projectile from it. It simply looks like an armored ambulance, if you will, that takes our CERT team members to a scene and extracts, hopefully safely, anyone who's threatened by someone else or some other entity that is in weaponized, and this vehicle allows us to get to that person or entity safely. And I think those are the basics. You just not to be used in a way that would the third one is crowd control.
It wouldn't
be used simply to bring out to control a crowd. There are other ways to do that. Our police department's been very good at that.
So the issue was none of this was on paper before, and now with this new piece of machinery, we wanted to get these things on paper now so everybody's clear of when and when it can't and how it can't be used?
Yes, so by codifying this at the city council level, it is law. These are impermissible ways to use the vehicle, the three ways I mentioned. And now if the police department, police chief is utilizing it for those things, and they're in violation of the law or the code that created that. Now, you're going to ask me penalties, and the penalty is, subject to discipline of some type depending on the severity of the occasion. So, we don't think that's going to be an issue, but if it happens, this is now the law. It's not just simply a policy that says, well, it's you should do this or you shouldn't do it. It is codified, and that's what the council wanted to do. And there's also, I think, some important follow-up. The Board of Public Safety will monthly get a report from the police chief and the CERT team about any use of the vehicle. And it may simply be no call-outs this month. Nothing. It wasn't used at all. Or, it was used.
But what it is, it's going to. Yeah, but what it is every month is going to show you what happened. So it's not going to be a year from now and somebody says, hey, 11 months ago when you used this, it's not going to fall into that crack.
That's correct. It's more timely and regular interval of updates on if it's used and deployed, how and why, and any kind of post-evaluation, which happens all the time when the CERT team is deployed. There is an evaluation of that incident and how they did and what they learned from it and so forth. There's actually a pretty elaborate matrix that goes with deploying the vehicle that was also reviewed by the Board of Public Safety, and I think the council looked at it as well. It's more of an internal document of what considerations go into deploying the vehicle from the police chief or the CERT commander to begin with. So that's sort of an internal document, but nonetheless, it did become more publicly discussed as part of this process, as it should. People should know what considerations going into thinking about deploying the vehicle. So we hope we never use it. I've said this many times. It's kind of like insurance. It's
right
here. If needed, it's not here yet, but when it gets here, if it's deployed, it would only be in the situations indicated by the matrix, and it won't be deployed in the ways that the city council codified last night.
And it protects those who go into places none of us want to go either. We cannot forget that. So, all right, that's pretty clear. That's pretty standard, and it will be updated monthly on that. And, if we see it, we see it, which I doubt we will because, again, the situations that it is codified to use for doesn't apply to daily life. All right, any trivia for me on the bicentennial version?
I do. I've got three choices. How many you want? One or two or three?
I'm going to do two because I don't want Keith to feel left out.
All right, sounds good. I'll give you two with dates in them then. And you'll have options, multiple choice.
When did
the first post office open in Bloomington? Was it 1818, 1822, 1823, or 1825?
I think you'd have to have before. I'm going to say 1818.
Okay, that's the year that the city and the county were obviously formulated officially. It's 1825, so it took them
seven years to get
a post office.
Oh, man, I thought that would be first, and then you would go and do all the other stuff. Well, I'm learning something. So 1825.
And I don't know the original location, at least not by this trivia, but maybe someone in the listening audience does know, and they can tell us, tell you on your show, and we can all get educated about where that first post office was. I don't have that information.
It wasn't Woodbridge.
No. It wasn't there. And it's not where it is right now either.
No, it's not.
All right, question number two for you today. In what year did RCA, the Radio Corporation of America, an electronics company, open its Bloomington plant? This is multiple choice as well. Is it 1939, 1940, 1944, or 1952? And I know a lot of listeners know the answer to this out there. Let's see if you do.
52.
1940.
40?
Yep.
Fantastic. Before the entrance into World War II, I could see that. All right. But I like to learn things. If I knew everything, the show would be boring.
Lots of folks worked for the RCA Corporation here. I know a lot of the listeners probably remember the era of the RCA plant. And in its heyday, I think it employed close to 8,000 people in our community. So
big part of it, no doubt.
Absolutely. 1940, first year that RCA opened.
And a proud portion of our history. So we learn something every week from the Bicentennial Trivia Department. Hey, great stuff as always. I hope to run into you either at the parade or the fireworks or both. Enjoy your weekend. It's going to be hot. Remember that. And if you're going to play 18, make sure you have enough water.
Appreciate that.
All right, buddy. Thanks for your time as always.
Have a good weekend.
All right, Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, checking in here, as he does on most Thursday mornings.